Oh, there we are. Now we are live. I was surprised by the like the button just came up. But yeah, welcome everyone to our weekly Insomnia Recovery Q&A. And Coach Alina is with us. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thank you, Daniel, for inviting me.
Oh, anytime. How are you today?
Doing well. Pretty nice. It's getting colder, actually. So, yeah, but overall, I kind of like missed maybe this kind of more depressed weather. Sometimes you kind of crave this melancholy.
Yeah. You know,
sometimes it feels nice. Not
yeah. Always. I was saying to you very briefly before we started that I thought we could do the same thing I did with Michelle last week. Just talk a little bit about like you know yourself and where you are and what's your favorite season and things like that. So yeah, where in the world are you?
I'm in Slovakia. I live here for a long time and basically. Yeah, I mean, in Bratislava, I love the city. I really find it so like, I would say the perfect size because like, I don't really like big cities, but Bratislava being a capital city, it's still, you know, not too many people, not too crowded. Streets during weekend are empty. Like there's no one almost, especially in the center because everyone goes to the nature and Slovaks here are quite avid cyclists, a lot of people who pick mushrooms. I think I was talking to you about
mushrooms
and I was surprised that in the US it's not really popular. You know, here people go to the forest and you know check out like different like the mushroom because there are so many types that you can actually consume as food. So yeah, it's
yeah.
Interesting culture here.
I was going to ask you about that. I think this is fall is the season for mushroom picking more than any, right?
Yeah. It's amazing. Last couple of weekends I spent just collecting mushrooms, and now I have like a full freezer of them.
Oh really? Oh, that's nice. Is it? That's chanterelles, right? Where people have like secret spot they don't tell everyone because they're like.
Yes, it's kind of yeah. They usually tell like, okay, this is the region where I saw, but they will never share the actual spot. It's very precious. Yeah.
How about that? When I was a kid, I grew up in Sweden, as you know, like there was like this one mushroom that was quite meaty, quite big. It was white and it had these red spots on it. And the people were like, that's poisonous.
Yeah, that's, I don't know how it's called like in English, but yeah, I know. It's very beautiful, but yeah, it is poisonous. You don't want to eat that.
Careful with that one.
Yeah.
All right. Very, very nice. We have some questions already. So let's jump in. Firstly, Libby's here. Libby's with us almost every Wednesday, which is nice. And this says the following. I found that on my bad days, even with conquering the fear fatigue loop, I can only make it through part of the day before exhaustion catches up and I crash. This often leads to me falling into fixating on sleep is the answer there. So read this again. Libby's found out on the bad days, even conquering fear, she can only make it through part of the day before exhaustion catches up and I crash and this falls into fixating on sleep. Okay, so thanks Libby for being here and asking. And I saw many more people have joined, so please feel free to drop your questions in the comments and we'll get to as many as we can. But yeah, when you read this, Alina, what do you think when you read this?
Yeah, well, the exhaustion, the this kind of like a loop where a person is afraid of, you know, going through the tough night because of the next, how they feel the next day, it's very common. But I would also maybe explain it a little bit from the different angle. Sometimes we experience or perceive exhaustion or tiredness as something bad. But in reality, if you take the emotional component, let's say like the suffering, the thinking about that feeling, if we take it out, we just have this like tiredness in the body like any other person would have, for example, after working, I don't know, like doing some hard activities. So in a way, the body shows like, okay, maybe it's time for some rest. And usually when the rest is provided, then there is some certain like, you know, maybe relief. But because we begin to think about exhaustion as something that is bad, is a sign of failing at sleep or a sign of not getting enough sleep. So this exhaustion turns into this kind of like like an enemy, and the brain naturally kind of like, we don't feel good after having this exhaustion. So I would say maybe to just maybe inquire into the relationship with the exhaustion and see maybe it's a good place to practice like self-kindness instead of like punishing yourself for having exhaustion or judging yourself for having like being tired after a poor night's sleep. Instead of that, actually seeing, okay, what can I do for myself today so that I could support my body? And this kind of kind approach can lead to untangling the situation, because then we remove the layer of pressure that comes from perceiving the exhaustion itself. And then also the pressure from pressure to sleep during the at night. So that's how like we can start kind of untangling this tricky situation. So I would say that really exhaustion is normal. And I would say this is not really something unique for insomniacs or anyone who experienced insomnia in the past. So for example, you, Daniel, like if you happen to have like a rough night, and then probably it's very normal that you sometimes feel tired. And there is nothing, no suffering that comes from thinking that, oh my God, I'm tired, I did something wrong, it should not be happening. So I would say that really seeing the exhaustion as a natural thing, like, you know, okay, yes, you had some rough night, maybe there were like a lot of emotional investment during the night. And therefore, like also like the fatigue comes, maybe the fatigue that kind of reveals in the later during the day is a sign that, let's say, hyperarousal goes up or goes down. And then the tiredness, kind of like natural tiredness, just appear. And then, you know, maybe it's a matter now of comfort. How can you make yourself comfortable during this time?
Yeah. Super well said. And yeah, absolutely. There are nights when I sleep very little for various reasons. And then naturally I'm more tired. But yes, when there's not this, no narrative around it and no kind of emotional relationship with it, there's really a little suffering. And but that, you know, sometimes I feel tired for emotional reasons too, of course. And this can be something like, you know, I think we all experience, like somebody has a really intense day at work, for example, where they felt frustrated or things didn't go their way. They didn't do anything physically tiring, but it was just, you know, emotionally tiring, and we can feel emotionally drained at the end of the day. Same thing there. It can, like, we can come home and feel kind of emotionally drained and be like, oh, I'm glad I'm home and now let me just be tired. Then it feels okay. But if you're like, oh, I shouldn't feel this way, then it becomes a little tricky. And I just want to add one last thing to this one, which was sometimes like one word can give you a little clue. And I think here, to me, the clue is conquer. You know, even with conquering the fear fatigue loop, I think whenever we have this idea that we've beaten something, we're fighting something, we're in a battle, or we conquered something, it's a little tricky, because ultimately, I like to say, if we want peace, our means need to be peaceful. And I think that plays a role here.
Absolutely.
So Libby, hope that makes sense. And we'll continue with Mateus. Thanks for being here, Mateus. And let's read this. Hi, coaches. One thing I realized is that my anxious thoughts and me overthinking gave me anxiety, which gave me insomnia. Any recommendations to help calm those anxious racing thoughts? So Mateus has realized that anxious thoughts produced anxiety, which produced insomnia. So the question is there, so how do we calm down racing thoughts? Okay, very well. I understand this one. What do you think when you hear this, Michelle? Alina?
Yeah, I would say like the thoughts in itself, like they cannot cause insomnia, because, okay, I would say it's worth saying that insomnia, how we talk here about insomnia, is fear of not sleeping. So it's the fear that surrounds the topic of sleep. So when we experience any anxious thoughts related to other areas in life, let's say we had some important, like, you know, argument at work or something, and we are ruminating about that, it can create sleep disruption, but it doesn't yet create insomnia. It is the reaction that kind of comes from, oh my God, but I'm not sleeping as well, so I should, you know, try harder to sleep because not sleeping is bad and blah, blah, blah. So then, you know, the whole process then starts happening when the brain detects, like, okay, the problem is not only that thing that we were originally overthinking, but also the sleep itself. And this is when the insomnia kind of like starts happening. And I would say it's good to understand the nature of racing thoughts. And just sometimes knowing that any thought actually is not in our control, meaning that we don't really choose which thoughts to think, which thoughts not to think. So thoughts, something like they come and go. And I usually like to have this, to say about this example, that the thought, let's say, what I'm going to have for a dinner and what if I will not sleep tonight, basically consists of the same stuff. It's the same thought. It's just it's like nothing, right? It's just a thought. But one doesn't produce the emotional response while the other creates a lot of suffering, because then launches the fight or flight response, and then we begin to worry about that. But in reality, what happens is that when we think about some thoughts as important, or the topic of those thoughts as important, this is when we create, the brain kind of generates more thoughts around the topic. So that's why it's good sometimes to look at it that the thought in itself, the racing thought in itself, they don't have any different substance than other thoughts, like some basic thoughts that we have during the day, like when we see a car and say, oh, I like that car, or something like this. In their essence, they are not different. But just seeing that, okay, that these thoughts, for some reason, the brain marked as important, and now because they're important, I experience like more of them. Then what I usually kind of explain to people, that we can change the label of the thoughts. Instead of important, we can kind of relabel them into automatic. Yes, they are unpleasant. They create some, emotional turmoil, but they're automatic as well. We don't choose them, and they don't carry much truth in them because they are automatic. They are not because there's some deliberate process was happening and they have some logic. It's just because the mind, when it's kind of detects the threat, it just throws at you a bunch of like ideas, or a bunch of like, oh, what if this, or what if that, and so on. Just comes up with solutions, and those solutions random. But because the topic of sleep is now so important, that's the brain can recognize this particular thought as something that worth paying attention to. So just to wrap up, changing the way we look at those thoughts, those racing thoughts, as unpleasant as they can be, they are at the same time automatic. It's autopilot. As if you would have a hiccup or something like this, that just happens. You cannot stop them at will, but you can lower the importance of them. And once the importance is not longer something like, okay, that's really important, I have to really listen to it, but instead you just perceive it as something, okay, that's just a thought. That's when it turns fleeting again. It becomes in the same category as like what I'm going to eat for dinner or something like this. But okay, it takes time to do this reliably. It doesn't happen overnight, not even like within like a few weeks. It's a process of the brain learning that, the thoughts in itself, they're not harmful. So
yeah. That's super well said. And, I'll just tag along, with what I usually say, which is like you said, how like the brain perceives a threat. It's just like, it just throws everything at it. Like, it's just like, how about this? 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 It, like ideas for us, which is, it's trying to help us. But it basically, I think if we think that this shouldn't be happening, I shouldn't have this many thoughts, let me try to stop them. It's basically like, my analogy is always like when we try to stop somebody from telling us something, like, don't tell me this. Then the person has an important message for us. They say like, oh, I'm going to try even harder.
Yeah.
But when we're like, oh, as you said, this is not actually important thoughts. It's just like, my brain is just sending these messages. We can choose to hear them. Like, okay, I heard that message, or just label them as, neutral. Maybe we're not that important. It will be really, really helpful, I believe. All right. So let's keep going. Nicholas is here. I believe the first time I see a question from Nicholas, welcome. Daniel says, I work night shift and I keep having to change my sleep schedule. How can I approach or apply your techniques? Oh yeah, now this is a nice one that doesn't come up super often, but I want to say this, that I often share that this like, timeless sleep window can be helpful for someone that has struggled with sleep and is particularly someone who's like, I'm not getting enough sleep. Let me go to bed super early and let me try to spend a whole night in bed. And if I don't sleep in the night, I'll try to sleep more at night. If for that person, then having some type of structure can help not because it's like amping up their sleep drive, which is going to make them sleep, but rather that having a little bit of structure, spending allotting less time for sleep can be a step towards trying less, like giving up control, you know. Same thing with not checking the time at night, it can be an invitation to like try less, you know, not attempting to control sleep. But then when somebody has shift work like Nicholas, you know, the question comes up like, how am I going to do this? What should I do? Well, I want to say that this whole idea with a timeless sleep window, it's not important whatsoever. It's just something that can help some people, but it's not important. I think what really matters is more education, like understanding like what is insomnia, what does it come from, what are these sleep efforts, what am I doing to actually propagate it. And so to kind of wrap this up now, to use your language, Alina, I would say that when we have shift work, I think we can still be mindful of not like going to bed, like spending a lot of time in bed attempting to sleep. We can be mindful of that, but also see that it doesn't matter if I shift work or not. What really matters is kind of education, understanding myself, my thoughts, etc. So that would be my answer to this one. But yeah, what do you think, Alina?
Yeah, I completely agree. Actually, don't have much more to add. I also received questions like this about shift work, and I know that this is a tricky situation because it thinks like, okay, the teaching is only about this, you know, the window, the some principles. In reality, it's just kind of like vehicles to help you problem solve less. But once you understand the principle why we actually, you know, at first like stop looking at time, not because like looking at time is what creates insomnia or not looking at time creates sleep. That's not true, because you might, you know, not look at time like at night, but it doesn't mean that it will lead to sleep, because nothing can have this power to put us to sleep except for our bodies that know how to do that. But just understanding why we do all those things, and basically applying that education, the fundamentals, also during like the time that is assigned for sleep, which sometimes can be during the day or in the morning hours. Just knowing that, you know, okay, if it's like if it was the like a night shift, and then now you come home and then you just took shower and now you have time for rest, just know that you're not pressured to, you know, to sleep. You don't have to keep a track how much time is left until the next shift or so on. It's just the same principles. It's not about the schedule or particular hours. It's just, as you said, about education, knowing where, what kind of efforts we do, and then reevaluating whether we want to keep doing the efforts or we rather take off the pressure and just go with the body, like how it feels like when to sleep, when to go to bed.
Yeah, I know. Well said. And what was I going to say? Yeah, one time, I think I heard you in a video say that sometimes we can just say, I'm going to rest, because rest is not like an either or. It's not a dichotomy. Yeah. It's more something like whether we sleep or not sleep, resting can be something nice for us. So maybe that we can add, that could be helpful for Nicholas as well. All right. Omar is here and says, hi, my psychiatrist says I have a panic disorder. Sometimes I have anxiety all day. Since last 2 years, my sleep has become very bad. I cannot stay asleep for more than 3 to 4 hours. Any advice? Thanks. Well, firstly, Omar, of course, sorry to hear this about the struggle, but you know, glad you found our channel and our content here. I can maybe start here and say when I think of panic attacks or panic disorder, the first thing that comes to mind for me is that, you know, a panic attack, I think, is sort of a micro version of like so many of the other sufferings we have. And there's so much to learn from it. A typical panic attack is that, you know, there's some, either it comes an external trigger or something like within us that just triggers a fear. And then we often, like, part of the panic attack is often like we have this fear that, okay, oh no, something catastrophic is about to happen. I'm going to pass out. I'm going to collapse. Something is about to happen. And that takes us to the next phase of a panic attack, which is the kind of like safety phase, which is like, okay, if I just sit down, or if I hold on to this something, or if I hold my breath, if I do something, it'll be fine. Then we do that safety behavior. and then we feel a little better, right? And then we can think that that was nice. You know, I just avoided that catastrophic thing that was about to happen. It feels good in the moment, but actually what we have taught ourselves is that, yeah, there was something catastrophic that was about to happen. You just save yourself. So you should keep like saving yourself. Yeah. Otherwise something catastrophic would happen. And so that's sort of like going for safety within a panic attack is actually oddly what keeps us having more of them, what keeps it recurring and maybe becoming even more intense. So my thinking when I hear this is that if we understand this about panic attacks, then we can understand that it's the same with insomnia, but a more like a drawn out process, or more like it's not like a 10 minute event. It's more like a, you know, it's a longer event, but it's the same principle. So that's just kind of what came to mind when I heard this. But so, yeah, what do you think, Alina?
Yeah, I completely agree with the panic attack thing. And in fact, like panic disorder very much resembles insomnia, because like panic disorder is a fear of panic attacks, which is kind of like self-created, you know, like we are afraid of panic attacks and therefore we have panic attacks. And the same with insomnia. We are afraid of not sleeping and therefore we are not sleeping. So, but I want to maybe like comment maybe on this, I cannot stay asleep for more than 3 or 4 hours. I can completely understand how that is, like, you know, begins to bother someone who, you know, starts experience something like this. But at the same time, knowing how insomnia works is the moment when we begin to tell ourselves, okay, I'm not okay with having 3-4 hours. I need more. Therefore, we introduce more pressure. And in reality, you know, any person can sleep, you know, that have the duration for whatever reason. So as a fact, like, it's kind of like neutral, but the story that we tell about it, the narrative that we have, okay, 3 or 4 hours is bad, I should not be happening, is usually what kind of keeps recreating the same outcome. But once we begin to feel more safe, even with 3 or 4 hours, this is when the brain will see, okay, nothing actually is going on, like nothing, you know, dangerous is going on. So then it will lower its defense mechanisms, and then the natural byproduct of that is the prolongation of sleep. So in a way that when we will do a very proactive behavior towards, okay, I need to increase that span of my sleep, this is when we will notice how we are actually like, because of the pressure, we keep being stuck with what we have. And usually when people like also ask me this kind of question, or I sleep 4 hours, but I want to sleep like at least 6 hours. How do I get sleep? How do I get 6 hours? And then I usually ask the question, well, how do you get 4 hours? What do you do to get 4 hours? So, but by this question, I want just to explain that because 4 hours is like not a goal, it's not important. Therefore, it happens effortlessly. But because now, like, let's say the new goal, which is like 6 or 7 or 8 hours, whatever, is important. It's like really, like, let's say the definition of success. This is when we are struggling with it. But we don't struggle with 3-4 hours because they are so like, it's nothing special. So I just want to kind of like really show how the pressure and putting the priorities on certain outcome can actually create the whole struggle.
Yeah, no, that's so well said. And, you know, I hear this so often as well, of course, like, you know, I somebody who's kind of like a little bit relieved, they say like, I've gotten from, you know, almost nothing to now sleeping at least 4 hours, but how do I get to the next step? And it's, you know, when you understand it, it's so obvious, right? But when you're in it, it's confusing because you still think I did something to at least get here.
Yeah.
Now what I do to get to the next step? And sometimes we have this like final hurdle where people are actually doing really well, except there's this one little thing, right?
Yeah.
The one little thing left, which is like, but when I'm traveling, I don't sleep so much. Mm-hmm. And then it's again, like, it's always the same. The answer is always the same. What took you all this way is going to lead you all, you know, the final stretch as well. But wow, nice, well said. Let's see if we can do one or two more here. Brandon says, I feel like avoiding sleep efforts is a sleep effort sometimes. Look at that. I forget what it's like to go to bed without thinking about if I will sleep or preparing for it. It's hard. I'm sorry, you know, I'm laughing because there's so much insight here. But of course, I understand that this is not easy, Brandon. But yeah, what do you think when you hear this?
I completely agree. Avoiding sleep efforts can become a sleep effort. And, you know, you don't have to prepare for night. In fact, nothing we do actually matters on sleep. Nothing can create sleep out of thin air. With that said, our bodies always know how to sleep. That ability is not broken, is not lost. We cannot unlearn it, forget it. It's really impossible to lose that. So in a way, like physiologically speaking, we don't have to worry that the body doesn't know what to do. So we need to understand that it is not the special preparation or like mental setup that helps us, you know, sleep. It is more about not having to do anything at all for our sleep. It's just basically removing the sleep from your decision making. Whatever you are, you know, when you go about your life or day, and then you have to face, like, you're faced with decisions. And when we keep always kind of like the variable as a, like sleep as a variable there, you know, like, okay, but that I like my friends ask me for to go on a trip somewhere, but here is my sleep and so on. So when we begin to make our decisions based, including like considering how we will sleep or how we might not sleep, this is when it gets tricky. But when we remove like the sleep from the decision making here and just say, do I actually want to go or I rather stay? And there are no wrong answers, because whatever you do is not going to make you sleep. Just like whether you go, it doesn't mean that you will suffer horribly from not sleeping the whole time. No one can predict that. We don't know that. The same way when we stay, let's say, and not go somewhere, then it also doesn't guarantee to have a great night. So I would say really disconnecting anything from sleep itself, because sleep is a separate entity that is, I really like recently I started using the combination of words like unconditional sleep. There are no conditions for sleep. Except for like the sleep drive that is like accumulating and so on, but that happens without our will involvement.
That too, exactly. No, I think, I know, well said. And I was just, you know, I think the insight is remarkable when Brandon says, you know, avoiding sleep efforts can feel like a sleep effort. It is. We actually have a name for it. We call it a counter effort when we have, but it happens very naturally when we see that, or me drinking sleepy time tea every night, that's actually me trying to make myself sleep. So I have to stop doing that now so I can sleep. We see that as the same intent. It's a kind of a counter effort. There was something else. Oh, yeah. I wanted to add one more thing here. I forget what it's like to go to bed without thinking about. Yesterday I had, Betul, our coaching student, we had a class together, and she said that during her insomnia, if she had kind of like on-off sleep, then she would still sort of remember what it feels like to feel sleepy, to drift off into sleep, and there wasn't so much struggle. But sometimes she'd go like a week with like really choppy sleep. And then she said it was almost as if she forgot what it feels like to feel sleepy, what it feels like to drift off into sleep. And the tricky thing then became for her that when she started feeling sleepy and almost drifting off, it was almost foreign to her. It was not familiar to her anymore. And then in itself, it would be alerting. So I just want to highlight here, Brandon, that this, losing familiarity with something that was very natural to us before is not strange or unusual. And although that doesn't sound necessarily as like very practical, like, okay, what do I do with that information? Well, know that it's not, so many people have experienced exactly that feeling, and that has not stood in their way. You know, if you just, you know, educate yourself, be kind to yourself, and learn, and things will become familiar again, and things will be easier. Let's do the last one from Rahul here, who says, hello, coaches. I found myself very calm and relaxed. I'm glad to hear that. Also into befriending wakefulness, but still can't fall asleep. Can I stay in bed and use my phone until I'm feeling sleepy? Well, I'll just start right away with saying that the fact that you find yourself calm and relaxed, I'm very glad. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I'm sure, you know, I see you spend a lot of time here commenting, Rahul, and I'm sure you're learning, and that's leading sort of where you want to be. Sometimes what can be tricky is that we don't feel anxious, but we're just not sleeping. And sometimes that can be like the just some low-level hyperarousal that we're almost not aware of even. But sometimes it's just curiosity, like, oh, I'm not anxious anymore, so I bet I'll fall asleep now. Let's see what happens. And that curiosity can lead to hyperarousal that keeps us awake. So I think just want to comment on that. And then the last one, like, can I use my phone until I feel sleepy? to me, it's a tricky one because on one hand, the answer to me is very straightforward. Yeah, you can do whatever you want, of course. But then the follow is like, until I feel sleepy. Then it becomes a question of like, do I feel sleepy enough? Or should I go a little bit longer? And there may be still an element of like finding the exact right moment, you know, trying to control sleep. So I want to say that I would say to someone like, use your phone, do whatever feels right. And then when you just feel like putting it down, then put it down. But don't go looking for the perfect timing and the perfect sleep cues, because that can be a little rabbit hole itself, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Looks like nothing particular to add to that one, Helena?
Yeah, I mean, I would just to add to what you said about this kind of like trickiness of waiting for sleepiness, and exactly the same with calmness and this relaxation and not sleeping. I would say what happens here is that the brain creates connection. Okay, if I'm, let's say, anxious, then I don't sleep. Therefore, when I'm calm, then I'm supposed to be sleeping. Yeah. So once we get that desired state, we feel like, okay, now is the showtime. Now I'm ready to, you know, to be sleeping. And therefore, this kind of expectation that calmness means sleep can play a trick on us. When instead of actually sleeping, we, because of the pressure, we are waiting. Okay, I'm calm. I'm completely in very accepting mood. But what is wrong with me? And so on. So it can create this kind of like, you know, paradoxical situation when we get what we wanted, but still the result, the sleep did not affect it. So I would say really it can be very helpful to disconnect, to break those connections. Every time the brain connects sleep with something, with some condition, really good to investigate whether that connection is really there. And the best way, I mean, I haven't thought of any of a better way to break those connections is by questioning, does every anxious state always lead to sleepless night, and vice versa, whether like every, like, you know, perfectly calm state always ensures that sleep will be as you expect. And usually when we think about that and think about our past experience, then we'll see that's not always true. So then the connection becomes like less strong, and then we begin to feel more at peace, let's say, when we are anxious. Then we know that, yes, we are anxious. I'm anxious, but it doesn't mean that I will have a terrible night. We'll see what happens. Maybe I will sleep, maybe I will not. The anxiety in itself does not kind of like specify, yes, this is because you're anxious, you're going to not sleep the whole night. We don't know that. And the same with the feeling of sleepiness, because also we would think that in order to sleep, we have to be super sleepy. We have to be really exhausted, which is not true as well, because I can perfectly imagine the situation when you say we are too tired to sleep. And that can happen to any person, actually. There are some people like who really exhaust themselves, and because there's too much exhaustion, they cannot sleep. That's a very paradoxical thing. So that also can already break the connection between sleep and let's say, sleepiness. We don't have to chase that extreme sleepiness. And sometimes maybe, again, like you can question whether you have maybe in your experience before insomnia or during insomnia when you didn't feel particularly sleepy, but then sleep somehow happened. You don't know how. Or the opposite, when you were very, very sleepy and the moment when you, let's say, moved to bed and then sleepiness was gone, even before insomnia, whether that happened, because looking at our past can be a really good proof that we don't have to chase certain things. We don't have to create another rabbit hole with insomnia. So I hope that this can a little bit lower the pressure from chasing calmness or chasing sleepiness, because that I know that it can create a lot of suffering on its own.
Yeah. No, that's super nicely said. I call that forecasting, when we're like, oh, I feel this way now, then this will happen. But very tricky thing, that forecasting. All right. Well, yeah. Thanks everyone for being with us. It was super nice. And thanks for joining, Alina.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right. We'll see you next time. Bye now.
Yeah, bye.